Welcome to the ISF Podcast from the Information Security Forum. The ISF Podcast is hosted by ISF CEO Steve Durbin, and every episode he brings listeners features timely conversations, practical insights, and resources for global cybersecurity professionals. I'm producer Tavia Gilbert. This week, Steve speaks with Margaret Heffernan, a professor of practice at the University of Bath School of Management. They examine how CISOs can educate the board, how to build resilience, and how to effectively invest in security.
Margaret, it's lovely to see you. Thank you very much for stopping by on the podcast today.
My pleasure.
One of the things that I really wanted to talk to you about was the role of cyber within the organization, and particularly how that impacts the way in which organizations think, go about their business, you know, from the board right the way down. What are your initial sort of reactions to that?
I mean, my first reaction is I'm very alarmed at how little understanding the cyber threat there is, which is a very shaky understanding of technology and how it works among boards and a lot of senior executives. And the way I think about it is I think people sort of think of cyber as a little bit like finance in the sense that it's a highly specialized activity. And the people who need to know about it need to know about it. But the rest of us don't really need to get that on top of it, you know. And I think that's wrong. I think the truth is that technology is now interwoven so profoundly with everything organizations do and what's possible and what isn't possible, threats and opportunities, that a better understanding of the technology is really essential. And in a way, we've seen this, you know, with the way that companies have struggled with their digital transformation, because the digital transformation is really about taking the digital expertise and combing it throughout the company rather than just in its little silo. But I think we have a very, very long way to go before people really take on board the very different thinking in technology, how it confronts complexity, and therefore really how best not just to think about it, but to do it.
One of the things I've certainly noticed is, I suppose, an increase in, I'll call it awareness.
Yes, at the board level. Sure.
That's certainly there, isn't it?
Yeah.
But the challenge is to get from awareness to actually doing something with it and understanding how it impacts the business. And one of the challenges, it seems to me, is that we do have boards that are certainly not cyber savvy, maybe not even technology savvy to a certain extent, but increasingly they will rely on one individual.
Correct.
John or Jenna
is
the person.
He's our cyber guy. Yeah.
That's right.
And he usually is a he.
Yes, right. Unfortunately he is. And we're not going to make a move until he says it's right or it's wrong. Looking at it from the CISO perspective, that presents a massive challenge.
It's also very lonely, right?
It is. How can CISOs better equip themselves to deal with that kind of situation? Because they can't change the makeup of the board, right?
No, and they don't want amateur security experts on the board.
Right.
But I think they do need to find a way to become educators. And I've seen this with a lot of technology, you know, ever since technology started playing such a big role in our lives, which is you need cultural translators who, without dumbing down, can really help people understand, first of all, conceptually and then practically, what is it we're really talking about? And what are the kind of key questions and parameters that we need to think about? And it's a tricky thing because most board members are people of a certain status and they like to think that they are very capable because generally they're there because they're very capable. Mm-hmm. But I think it's important for everybody to acknowledge, especially in the area of cybersecurity, that this is moving so fast and it is so complex. There isn't anybody around the boardroom who doesn't need an update, who doesn't need really to be kept abreast of what's going on out there and how does it impact our business and what should we be paying attention to. So in the nicest possible way, I think everybody needs some education. And my general experience of companies, when they do this, if they find the right light touch way to do it, people are very grateful Because the reality of the boardroom is people are sitting around knowing they don't really know, not wanting to ask this stupid question, so they don't ask questions at all. Well, that's the really dangerous moment.
Right.
I mean, on my boards, I would much rather have a stupid question than no questions. But mostly when it comes to technology, there are no questions. And so I think everybody's got to recognize that a lot of learning is required, you know, A, to get up to speed, B, to stay up to speed.
How can we better equip our boards then to have that learning? Because as I listen to you, I agree entirely with what you're saying, but it strikes me that we've got boards who are looking at this sort of technology and cyber as being something new they don't understand. We've got CISOs who, in the main, are very new to the boardroom, to seniors. They're not used to talking to them.
Exactly.
And so you've got these two novices, if you trying to come together to learn how to communicate. How can we better educate in that kind of space?
Yeah, and usually what they're doing is they're kind of talking past each other or sometimes bluffing past each other. I mean, it's interesting because I think this is at least part of what went on in the Equifax data breach study, you know, which is, it seems to me very, very clear that most of the board had no idea. And the one board member who had technology experience, it was a long time ago in a simpler epoch. I mean, there are a couple of ways. I mean, if you're lucky and your CISO is fantastically eloquent, then they will do that gentle educating as you go along. And if you're chairing that board, you want to actually make sure that they are doing that. I think there are two other things that become really important. One is it's equally crucial that the CISO deeply understands the business. So this is why I was so interested, you know, in Gartner's research showing that chief analytics officers and chief data officers are not lasting very long because they're doing their thing and chucking it over the wall, generally to people who don't understand it.
Right.
And the strategy people on whom this is landing are chucking their strategy over the wall where it's landing with a CAO or a CDO who doesn't understand it. So you have this highly siloed environment where everybody's defending their patch, but they don't talk to each other. So the data isn't informing the strategy and the strategy isn't informing the data. So you've got to invest the time, A, in building the relationships, being humble and coming and saying, I know everything there is to know about cybersecurity. I don't know everything I need to know about your business. Mm-hmm. I don't know everything I need to know about your strategy. Will you please educate me? At that point, you start to build a relationship. The relationship will almost invariably build a level of trust, or better, right? And at that point, people are going to start opening up to each other. And it's very clear from the work, you know, that I've done on collaboration and collective intelligence, the more time people spend working together, the higher the level of trust. The higher the level of trust, the greater the willingness to ask questions and have real debates. So I think it's two things, recognizing that there isn't a common language.
Right.
It's your job to forge one. And secondly, recognizing that investing in developing those relationships is going to build slowly but surely an environment in which the hard, sometimes stupid, and therefore deeply valuable questions can be asked.
You make an interesting point there about trust. Trust isn't something that you can just wake up one morning and say, right, that's it, we're going to trust each other, off we now go. One of the issues that I've seen is that the CISO himself or herself also is probably in the role for 18 months, 24 months. So, you know, the first 6 months, getting a feel for things, then they start to do a bit of whatever they're doing, and then they've checked out and off they've gone. Now, the ones that are what I would call the sort of the power CISOs, the ones that have probably been doing it a little bit longer, they tend to stay longer. Mm-hmm. They tend to be very prescriptive when they go into the role about what they need to be successful, what they expect to get back to help them do their job better. Mm-hmm. And they're not afraid to walk away if the business isn't going to provide them with that.
Right.
For some people listening to this, that may send shivers down their spine because they think, gosh, you know, how can I possibly do that? But that's all part of building trust, isn't it?
It's part of building trust. It's also saying these are the conditions for my success and my success is your success. But it's also a subtle form of educating people in terms of what is the role that cybersecurity plays in the company at the whole. Because, again, it is a little bit like finance in the sense that it does actually inform everything. And you don't have to be the CFO, you know, to make any kind of decision, but you do have to understand money. Mm-hmm. In the same way, you don't have to be the CISO in order to understand that everything you do in your organization is jeopardized by or enhanced by security. Mm-hmm. It's everything you do is going to have that aspect to it, so you really better understand it. But you're absolutely right. I mean, the Dutch have this saying that trust comes on foot and it leaves on horseback, right? and it is about investing time in people, you know, with people, getting to know what are they worried about? What is the nature of the business that they're in? And therefore, what is the role that security plays? And therefore, what does cybersecurity have to offer them that makes their lives easier? And assuming that they know that is going to be a mistake.
Now, one of the other questions I always get from boards is, and I'm paraphrasing here, but why is it that we can't measure security in the same way that we can measure everything else?
Yeah.
What makes security so special?
Yeah. Well, because in a way, you know, you're going to measure your success by how little you have to measure, right?
Right.
So it is one of these things of trying to measure the invisible, that it's successful to the degree that all sorts of terrible things don't happen. And I think, you know, one way to think about that is to take a broader overview and say, okay, so this is the rate at which cyber attacks are happening. This is the rate at which they succeed. Are we doing better or worse than that? So you have to look at that general sort of data. But, I mean, I was in a board meeting a couple of months ago where they brought in an external expert to talk about, you know, the cybersecurity landscape,
right,
and so on. And, I mean, the board's jaws dropped, mm-hmm, when they saw actually how consistent cyber attacks are and why. And I think it was actually understanding there is this whole infrastructure of people who see there's a vast amount of money to be made here. Mm-hmm. And I think in the past, I mean, I may be being a little unkind, but I don't think I'm being, you know, deliberately mean when I say I think the board had mostly gotten their impression of cybersecurity from movies, where they thought they were slightly dysfunctional, long-haired, unwashed individual maniacs,
right,
poking away at laptops. And that, I mean, I don't need to tell you, you know, that environment has changed so radically.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
In the same way that organized crime is part of our real-world life. Mm-hmm. It is now a part of our cyber life. And we have to take the same protections against it. But you're going to measure it by how much doesn't happen.
Right. Which is an interesting concept for a lot of people, isn't it?
Yeah.
You're actually turning things on their head, aren't you? Because we're very used,
exactly,
to measuring how often things do happen. And,
yeah,
and it's flipping it. And certainly that's one of the things that we try to do. You know, one of our flagship programs is something called the Threat Horizon that many members listening,
yeah,
to this will be familiar with. And the transition that we're making there is to look at cyber threats, mm, very much more through the lens of scenario planning.
Mm-hmm.
So planning for certain situations.
Right.
What's your take on that? Are we doing the right thing, I suppose? I'm looking for
yeah,
reinforcement
yeah, yeah.
here.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm a huge fan of scenario planning, and I'm really pleased to see that, you know, it's kind of coming back into people's thinking. Because mostly what I see in many, many board meetings is everybody's having an argument about this is going to happen or this isn't going to happen. This is pointless. The future hasn't happened, mm-hmm, yet, so we don't know, right?
Right.
And people really struggle with acknowledging that actually they do not know the future and they cannot know the future. And I think what's so brilliant about scenario planning is really two things. One is it keeps you uncertain. You know, if you have multiple scenarios, by definition, you're acknowledging uncertainty is part of life. But the other thing that I witness over and over and over again is that what these scenarios identify is huge opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
huge opportunity in terms of product development, in terms of service development, in terms of policies, often in terms of attitudes to competitors or to governments or the regulatory environment. So it's a phenomenal way to get ahead imaginatively and to think about what the future is going to need and start now instead of waiting for the moment where actually you're playing catch up, which is mostly what we do. And we mostly do that because I think we've got very hooked on just-in-time thinking, right? We do just-in-time supply chains, just-in-time manufacturing and all this kind of stuff. And that's very driven by efficiency.
Right.
Now, efficiency is fantastic in situations where what you're doing is totally predictable. You can see all the forces at work that are impacting what you're doing, and you can control them. So if you think of an assembly line, that's where efficiency is absolutely fantastic. You can see everything that's happening. You can control it. It's the same every day. So you really are going to want to get all the margins out to make it as lean and efficient as you can. But that isn't where we live. Mm-hmm. A huge part of the business world also is complex, right. And it's in the nature of complexity that it's nonlinear. You often can't see all the forces that are at work. You definitely can't control them. And you will see patterns, but they will not repeat themselves predictably. In that environment, efficiency will kill you because when a surprise comes along, you've eroded all your margins to respond.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think the crucial thing for boards to think about is what are the areas in which we have that very clear line of sight, predictability, that's where efficiency is God.
Right.
What are the areas which are complex where we don't? In that area, you need to be thinking about resilience, which is the capacity to recover, and robustness, which is the capacity to withstand all threats. Now, robustness is always going to be your most expensive option.
Right.
So you have to reserve that for the things that are fundamental, absolutely, absolutely, absolutely fundamental. There won't be many of those, but there will be some. Mostly, you're probably looking at resilience. But whereas, you know, if you're looking at this through a finance lens, all of this will look super expensive.
Mm-hmm.
You have to ask yourself the question, what happens if we don't do it, right? So the analogy often used in this context is, you know, when you get on a plane, you're getting on something that has been designed by engineers to be robust. It
right.
has more engines than it needs. It has more operating systems than it needs. That's so if there's a bug in the operating system, and I guarantee you there will be at least one, right?
Yep.
It doesn't take out the whole plane. It means that if one of the engine fails, it doesn't take out the whole plane. That's because there's a realistic assessment that when you're up in the air, you don't know everything that's going to happen and you know you can't control it. But you, in the same industry, you look at how you check people in and load their bags and feed them. That's very complicated. It's the same every day. It doesn't really matter what the food is. It's all going to be loaded the same way. Bags are bags. Check-in is check-in. That's optimized for efficiency, and it's brilliant, absolutely brilliant. And if something goes wrong, it isn't a disaster.
Right.
So you have to be able to tell the difference between those two things and apply a different mindset.
And it's interesting you put it that way, because very often the challenge that CISOs come to me with is that of how do I get the message across that I need the money to do something, and yet I can't guarantee its success.
Right.
I can't guarantee that we won't have a breach.
And this is, you know, this is why I've told the story about the Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness, because I think what they did there was genius, really, which is they, you know, this thinking that there are certain things you can't be sure that they're going to happen, but you know if they do happen, the impact is so enormous that you can't wait. You have to prepare. And you have to accept the fact that you may invest a lot of money that doesn't go anywhere. So what I think is so interesting about the thinking that this Coalition for Epidemic Preparedness did is they recognized there are certain things it's worth investing in, even though we may never need them, even though we may never use them, because the cost of not doing it is so gigantic compared to the cost of doing it.
Right.
Now, they didn't try to develop vaccines for every disease on Earth. That would be crazy. So they're looking at likelihood and impact. This is likely. In other words, it could happen. It has epidemic potential, this disease. And if we had an epidemic of that disease, the consequences would be catastrophic. Mm-hmm. Those are the areas where we act, where there's high likelihood with high impact.
Some great insights there, Margaret, into some of the ways in which boards and indeed CISOs can adapt their thinking, work better together. And I'm sure that our listeners will have taken away some really key points from that that they can put into effect straight away. So thank you very much for sharing those insights with us. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you, Margaret. Thank you very much indeed.
Thank you very much. Thanks a lot.
Thanks to this week's guest, Margaret Heffernan. We'll be back with a new episode in a week. In the meantime, as always, we ask that you take 10 seconds to pull up this podcast on whatever device you're listening and give us a 5-star rating. If you have a little more time, you can even write a quick review. That helps other listeners who might enjoy our content find us. And we also want to make sure to introduce you to the ISF Analyst Insight podcast, which goes in depth on the hottest topics in information security. In every episode, ISF analysts hand-select active security professionals from ISF member organizations to discuss how the implementation of ISF research is uniquely applied to their real-world context. We hope you'll listen, and of course, we'll put a link to that show in our show notes. If there's a topic or a question that you'd like us to cover in a future episode, let us know at securityforum.org, which is also where you can find our catalog of past video and podcast episodes, as well as ISF's research, practical tools, and guidance related to discussions like today's. The ISF podcast is produced by TalkBox and Tavia Gilbert, with music by Alexander Filipiak, senior producer Katie Flood, mix and master by Kayla Elrod. Thanks for listening.